If you would please open your Bibles to 2 Chronicles chapter 22. 2 Chronicles chapter 22. I said that we were going to kind of go back and forth depending on the points that we want to study and look at the most, and between the account of the kings and the account found in the Chronicles. It's interesting, just little blips of information that you might get in one that you don't get in the other one. And so as we put these together, we get a pretty good view of what was taking place during this most fascinating period of Old Testament history. I was commenting to someone, not everyone shares my enthusiasm for this particular period of time in history, but it's fascinating to me. And because I get to be the teacher, you get to drag along there with me. So I appreciate your interest in this Old Testament study, the work you're doing to make it beneficial and profitable so that you can remember it and remember the events as they transpire. In our study Sunday morning, we'll not reiterate all that we talked about Sunday morning as far as the history is concerned, all the way back to Moses, in fact, all the way back to Genesis 3. But I want to pick up here in the 22nd chapter of the Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, and talk with you a little bit about the King Joash, who was king in Judah at this time. Now, this chart you're going to see frequently because I want us to keep in mind the lineage of kings. Who's on the side of Judah, and who's king in Israel. And we're just going to move down the list. I was talking with Chris a little bit earlier that instead of just going down the list of kings in Judah and then coming over here and going down the list of kings in Israel, we could do that, but I don't think that is as productive, and it's certainly not the way it's presented in Scripture. And it's not the way that it's presented in your lesson book. What we want to do is to come down both sides, the kings in Israel and the kings in Judah. It may mean discussing two or three kings here and then going over here and catching up. And then maybe a king here and then two or three here. But we're going to try to bring it down together on the page where you can use your book to its fullest extent. And I would implore you to read the passages that are set forth in the book. Because this is, as I mentioned a number of times, one of the best charts of the kings that I've seen. And I think it's helpful to us in our study. Now, in the nation of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, we've been talking about Jehu. And we've noted that Jehu, what did he do? We think of Jehu and we think about a particular task the Lord had in mind for him.
He ended the house of Ahab.
He ended the house of Ahab. That's right. He killed Jehoram, the son of Ahab, and he killed Ahaziah, the grandson of Ahab, through his daughter Athaliah, who had married Jehoram, the king of Israel, or the king of Judah. And so we've got a kind of a mess going on there as far as trying to remember the names. But I want to talk with you tonight about Joash, the son of Athaliah. Now, one of the things that we have discussed already about Athaliah, what was it that she wanted to be? King. And she was the she king in Judah for how long?
6 years.
That's right. Now, in the interim, there is a grandson that has been preserved. Who preserved him? All right. Her sister.
Ahaziah's sister.
Ahaziah's sister. That's correct. Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram and Athaliah, if I'm correct in my memory. But the point being, young Joash, Athaliah, was wanting to kill him, as well as all the kids and grandkids. And she was not successful because Jehoiada, the priest, preserved the life of young Joash along with his wife, Jehoshabeth. Jehoshabeth, I think, is is probably better. And that's what we read about in chapter 22. Now, as you continue, yes, Randy, the point that we were discussing is in verse 11 of chapter 22. For she was the sister of Ahaziah. Helps us with that point. But as we continue into chapter 23, what does Jehoiada do? Just blip that off for a minute. What does Jehoiada do?
He proclaims Joash to be the king.
How old is Joash? 7 years old. And he is proclaimed to be king. Now, does Jehoiada just get a soapbox and go out in the city of Jerusalem and say, Joash is king?
No, he guards him on every side with the guards.
All right, he gets all the captains of the guards and everybody together, and he arms them with the shields and the bucklers and the spears that had belonged to King David, and everything is very much controlled when he announces that Joash is king, and the people respond by saying, Long live the king. At least that's the reading of the American Standard Translation. I think some other translations word that just a little bit differently. That's in verse 11 if you would like to check that. But when Athaliah heard all the commotion, what did she do?
She
came unglued. Treason, treason. She's accusing Jehoiada of treason. And Jehoiada, the priest, brings out the captains of the hundreds, and he says to them, she needs to die, but not here. And so they take her to the place where the horses would approach the temple, and they killed her. And that was the end of Athaliah. Now, Joash is declared to be king. He spent 7 years, for the most part, with Jehoiada and Jehoshabed. And evidently, during this time of his young life, he's been taught some really good things. And you'll notice on the board that he was king for 40 years. That's a long time to be king. But when we look at the life of young Joash, while he's under the tutelage of Jehoiada, things are good. He's a very good king. And I want to look at some of this in chapter 24, reading beginning at verse 2. Chapter 24, verse 2. It says, And Joash did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And Jehoiada took for him two wives, and he begat sons and daughters. And it came to pass after this that Joash was minded to restore the house of Jehovah. And he gathered together the priests and the Levites and said to them, Go out into the cities of Judah and gather of all Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year. Just lost my place. And see that ye hasten the matter, howbeit the Levites hastened it not. What's that mean? They didn't do it quickly enough. That's right. They just drug their feet. But his words to them was, Go out and gather these taxes and do it every year. And so what then did they do eventually when they got around to it? They prepared a chest. And they set the chest in a particular place and people would come and put money into the chest. Now this may be a foolish question, but what did they do when the chest was full?
Emptied it out,
and we start all over again. All right? So they're gathering money. And the people evidently are being quite benevolent. They're giving. And the chest becomes full, and they pour it out, and they gather some more. And the text tells us, beginning in verse 12, that the king and Jehoiada gave it to such as did the work of the service of the house of Jehovah, and they hired masons and carpenters to restore the house of Jehovah, and also such as wrought iron and brass to repair the house of Jehovah. Verse 13 tells us that the work went forward, and in verse 14 it says, And when they made an end, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, whereof were made vessels for the house of Jehovah, even vessels wherewith to minister and to offer spoons and vessels of gold and silver, and they offered burnt offerings in the house of Jehovah continually all the days of Jehoiada. So we find that things at this point are going rather well. Yes.
Maybe this is coming later, but I didn't understand it that way. It seemed at first they were collecting the tax, but they were giving it to the priests and Levites, and that's why the work wasn't being done. And so Joash finally kind of got and said, okay, let's do it. This is when they put the chest out. And then they started using it for the repairs, because I understood to say that they had been collecting money, but he didn't see any repairs going on.
Ah, well, that's interesting. Well, I didn't get that impression, but that could be so. We're introduced immediately to Josiah's reign in the beginning of this chapter, and then in verse 4, rather quickly, it tells us that Joash was minded to restore the house. And he gathered these men together, verse 5, gave instructions to them, and they did not really get after the program and follow the instructions immediately. Verse 6, let's look. And the king called for Jehoiada, the chief, and said unto him, why hast thou not required of the Levites to bring in out of Judah and out of Jerusalem the tax of Moses, the servant of Jehovah, and of the assembly of Israel, for the tent of the testimony, for the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken up the house of God and also all the dedicated things of the house of Jehovah, but they did they bestow upon the Balaam. Wanted to talk about that. And then in verse 8, so the king commanded, and they made a chest and set it without at the gate of the house of Jehovah, and they made proclamation, etc., etc., to bring in to for Jehovah, verse 9, the tax that Moses, the servant of Jehovah, had laid upon Israel in the wilderness. Well, again, I think the point is that the Levites are dragging their feet. They're not doing what they should have been doing. Now, it could very well be that they're gathering the tax and not paying for the restoration.
But in 2 Kings chapter 12, verse 6, but it came about that in the 23rd year King Jehoash, the priest had not repaired the damages to the house. Then King Jehoash called for Jehoiada the priest and says, why do you not repair the house?
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, it seems they have the responsibility to do that, and they're not doing it. Now, therefore, take no more money from your acquaintance, but deliver it for the breaches of the house. And the priests consented that they should take no more money from the people, neither repair the breaches of the house. But Jehoiada the priest, verse 9, took a chest and bored a hole in the lid of it and set it beside the altar on the right side as one cometh into the house of Jehovah. And the priest that kept the threshold put therein all the money that was brought into the house of Jehovah. Well, it seems that, well, these Levites, they're just not doing their job. The money seems to be gathering, but they're not using it properly.
Yeah, I was going to say, you stopped two verses short before I think it clears it up.
Okay, and the which account?
2 Chronicles 24. In verse 11.
Verse 11.
It says, it came about whenever the chest was brought in to the king's officers by the Levites, when they saw that there was much money, the king's scribe, the chief priest officer, would come, empty the chest, take it, and return it to its place. Thus they did daily and collected much money. The king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work of the service of the house of the Lord. And they hired masons and carpenters to restore the house of the Lord, and also workers in ivory bronze to repair the house of the Lord. Well, it says that the king's scribe and the chief priest's officer took the money, but then the very next verse says the king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work. So it's implied anyway.
Yeah.
It was given to the king.
Yeah, yeah. They're not using it like it needs to be used, and the king is. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't picked up on that. That is, that's interesting. But what we do see is Josiah is restoring the temple. Joash is restoring. We haven't got to Josiah yet. Yes, you picked up on that.
Yeah. I've had to be
careful in my reading of it as well to make sure that I make a mental note that's not Josiah. That's Joash. But the thing that's interesting to me is, as we look at this text, the temple of Baal has been destroyed, and one of the things that we didn't comment very much on is in chapter 24, verse 7, regarding the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman had broken up the house of God. Athaliah has done a lot of damage, and she has taught her sons to do a lot of damage, and the temple is in need of repair because of these things. And so young Joash is interested in repairing the temple. Much money is collected, and now it is being used for the intended purposes of repairing the temple. But if you'll return to the account of the Chronicles in chapter 24, in verse 15 it says, "But Jehoiada waxed old and was full of days, and he died. 130 years old was he when he died. And they buried him in the city of David among the kings, because he had done good in Israel and toward God and his house. After the death of Jehoiada came the princes of Judah and made obeisance to the king. And the king hearkened unto them. And they forsook the house of Jehovah, the God of their fathers, and served the Asherim and the idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their guiltiness. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them again unto Jehovah. And they testified against them, but they would not give ear." Now this just gets more and more interesting. Young Joash, all the days of his mentor, has done good. And when his mentor is dead, now who becomes his mentor?
The young man.
The young man. Sound familiar? A little bit, yeah. Tell me about it.
Well, it's like Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. He had the opportunity to have, as mentors, the same people that were helping his father. And instead, he chose the young ones.
Okay.
Were more hip.
Well, yeah, that's well put. Here we see that these who came to young Joash, it tells us they did obeisance unto him. What does that indicate?
They
put him on a pedestal. Yeah, and evidently he liked that. He's the king.
What does it say they were young then?
Well, it doesn't tell us their age.
I mean, compared to 130.
Yeah. Anybody's young compared to 130.
Yeah.
Well, the idea is, she has suggested, is the comparison of Rehoboam and the young men who counseled him.
And even if he had reigned for 40 years, he only started at 7, so he's not an old man himself.
No, he's not.
So it's logical to believe that it would be younger men.
Yeah.
Also, Jehoiada is a priest, and it says these were officials of Judah, so perhaps it's shifted from someone of a religious nature to politicians.
You mean it does that?
And that never works well.
It never works well, no. No. And when you look at Joash, you see him playing the politician. He has been the good king, but now these people are putting him on a pedestal and praising him, and whatever you want. Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Politics, terrible thing. But that's not anything new, is it? Politics. Well, notice that God sent prophets to them. Verse 19, to bring them again unto Jehovah, and they testified against them, but they would not give ear. That sounds familiar too, doesn't it? Where God communicated with his people, often communicating directly with the king, and he would not listen. Sometimes we're that way. We just won't listen. Now, I forget the passage, but in the Proverbs, a man who won't listen is described how? He's a fool. That's right. He's a fool.
A lot of places in there.
Yeah. He's a fool. Well, could it be said then that Joash, as long as he received the counsel of Jehoiada, old wiser mentor, he was wise. But when he abandoned the counsel of Jehoiada, he became a fool. He wouldn't listen to those who knew. And so we learn that he abandoned the worship at the temple, and he turns to idols. This is fascinating as well. In verse 20, the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest. What kind of relationship does that indicate that Joash had with Zechariah? If young Joash was 7 when he was declared to be king, and now we're talking about the son of Jehoiada, would it indicate at all that they had any relationship at all? Pardon? Well, likely knew him, yes, but here we've got Jehoiada, a high priest, and his son, a prophet. Wouldn't you think that it might even go a little bit beyond that? I mean, without a great deal of speculation. More than just acquaintances, nonetheless.
I think he might be sort of an uncle figure or something.
Well, perhaps so, but...
They call Jehoiada his father because he, you know, raised him, basically. And so this was the son, so it would have been an older authority figure, perhaps.
Perhaps so. The thing that fascinates me is this. When you look in the latter part of verse 20, Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest, came to Joash, and it tells us that he stood above the people and said unto them, "Thus saith God, why transgress ye the commandments of Jehovah so that ye cannot prosper?" Now that just sounds reminiscent of the things that we've talked about repeatedly. What's the rule?
Obey me and I'll bless you. Yeah.
Yeah, seems simple, doesn't it? That's the rule. You do what I tell you and I'll bless you. If you don't, I'll curse you.
I got a question. I'm not sure if I might be jumping the gun.
Okay.
Because we know that he can kill it.
We don't know that yet.
Okay.
We haven't got there. But that is in the next verse.
Spoiler.
Yeah. What we want to note just here is that Zechariah addresses the people. Why have you forsaken God? Why have you denied yourself the blessings of God? Wouldn't you think that a flag would go up somewhere along the line of this history to at least learn some of the history? To say, look at this period of history. We did well. And look at this period of history. We did not do well at all. Wonder why? Who was king over here and what did he lead us to do? Who's king now and what's he leading us to do? Wouldn't you ever stop to raise that question? Well, if we're not familiar with history, what is the old adage? We're doomed to repeat it. That's right. If we don't learn the lessons, we're doomed to repeat it. Now, if you'll look again at this text, Randy, now pick it up at verse 22. If you would please read that for me. Well, you can begin at 21, yes.
So they conspired against him, and at the command of the king, they stoned him to death in the court of the house of the Lord. Thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which his father Jehoiada had shown him, but he murdered his son. And as he died, he said, "May the Lord see and avenge."
Oh, yes. Joash. Forgot all about Jehoiada. Forgot all about the good things he'd done. And here's Jehoiada's son. Zechariah and Joash has him slain. What's that say to you? When you don't listen to God, you're willing to go about any length. And that's what Joash did. When we think of Joash, we want to think good things, but we can't hear.
They thought, kill the messenger.
Kill the messenger, that's right.
You don't hear anymore.
It don't matter who he is.
My question, now that we're there,
okay,
is the reference that Jesus makes in Matthew 23. In Matthew 23:34 and 35, he says, "Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, so that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on the earth, the blood of righteous Abel, the blood of Zechariah, the son of Zechariah." Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Truly I say to you that these things will come upon this generation. My question is, if this is the same Zechariah, it shows that he's the son of Berechiah. Wondering if Berechiah is another word, another name for Jehoiada, or is this one of those things where maybe that was a grandfather, or because son of just means descendant of.
Right. Yeah, all of that is good. I'm not sure that this is the same Zechariah that Jesus was talking about.
More than one Zechariah might have been killed in the temple.
It's possible, I would suppose. But if this is the same Zechariah, and I'll have to study that. I've got some material on that. I've read it, but I've forgotten the details of it. It's been a while since I read that. I read that in the study of Matthew 22, 21 through 25, particularly regarding the destruction of Jerusalem in Matthew 24. But I'll have to go back and look at that again. But the order that Jesus is using as far as the prophets that were slain, he begins where?
Abel.
Abel to Zechariah. If memory serves me, and don't quote me on this, that Zechariah was the last of the prophets to be slain. Now, I want to look that up and be sure that that's true. But he's not necessarily recounting all of the people that were mistreated. But the judgment from Abel to this point, if indeed this is the same Zechariah, and I want to study that some more as well.
He says, to his blood shed.
Yeah. To this point, that judgment is going to come upon the nation of Israel in the destruction of Jerusalem. In other words, the hammer is going to fall. Now, what we want to note is that the hammer falls before the destruction of Jerusalem. It fell when Assyria took the northern 10 tribes captive. The hammer fell when Judah was taken by Nebuchadnezzar. The hammer fell with the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 72, as Jesus is talking. Pardon me?
Final hammer.
Yeah, yeah. So what we want to note is judgment's coming. And it came in several different events of history, several different points along the timeline. Interesting question. I wish I had prepared to answer that question tonight. I'll have to look back at my notes, refresh my memory.
You know, as I was reading, I was like, ding.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah. Well, I've entertained that question before, and memory. Yes.
One of the things Juan pointed out to me is in the book of Zechariah, chapter 1, verse 1, Zechariah is the son of Berechiah.
Okay.
That Zechariah is.
Okay.
So,
that,
the book of the prophets.
Yeah, that was my thinking, but I wasn't sure, so I wasn't going to say anything to that effect. I'll have to go back and confirm some of the things that I've already suggested, but that's helpful. Yes, I think perhaps that it is, but we've got a different point on the timeline with the statement of Jesus. So I want to go back and be clear on that before I say anything concrete. But that's a good question. I've studied that. It aggravates me when I can't remember the details that I've studied. Somebody said, you'd be a smart fellow if you could just plug the hole at the bottom where all this information leaks out. Study it, but can't remember. All right. Well, let's look just a little bit further. As we talk about the prophets, here we have Joel, who also prophesied during this same time frame, as well as the son of Jehoiada, and the enemies of the people of God. If you'll look at your chart on page 106 of that chart, you'll notice that Hazael is the king of Syria, and he is Israel's arch enemy. And you'll notice that Jehu paid tribute to Shalmaneser III according to Assyrian records. That's interesting as well. We don't have anything in the Bible that would confirm that, but our author of our book helps us with that bit of information. Now, during this time frame, Hazael attacks Judah. Hazael dies, and his son, Ben-Hadad, is made king of Syria. Why is that important?
Because
set him up to be king.
He did, yes. He did. And as he's set up to be king, what's about to happen? What's he going to be used for?
Punishment to Israel.
Punishment to Israel. Very good. Very good. I want to drop down here. We've got a point that's made in the Kings that is not made in the account of the Chronicles. If you'll turn to 2 Kings chapter 12. 2 Kings chapter 12. And pick up the reading there about verse 17. 2 Kings chapter 12, verse 17. It says, when Hazael, king of Syria, went up and fought against Gath and took it, and Hazael set his face to go up to Jerusalem, and Jehoash, king of Judah, took all the hallowed things that Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah, his fathers. Now, I want to pause right there. Just hold your finger. We're not done reading that. But here in the American Standard Translation, it identifies Jehoash. You see that? King of Israel. Same guy. King of Judah, I'm sorry. Same guy. You'll note that he's identified as the son of Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah, his fathers. Now, if you just come down the family tree, you see who we're talking about. Jehoash is not a different character. Same man. So don't be confused by that. Now go back to verse 18 and let's pick it up again. It says, and Jehoash, king of Judah, took all the hallowed things that Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah, his fathers, kings of Judah, had dedicated, and his own hallowed things, and all the gold that was found in the treasures of the king's house, and of the king's house, in the house of Jehovah, of the king's house, and sent it to Hazael, king of Syria, and he went away from Jerusalem. What is it that young Joash has just attempted to do? Well, did. What did he do?
Paid off the king.
Yeah. Bribed him.
By stripping the temple.
By stripping the temple. That's right. Now, what was it that young Joash initially did under the leadership of Jehoiada?
Refurbished
the temple. And so he's got all of this collection of funds that has been used to refurbish the temple, paid all the craftsmen to do their work, and now all the vessels that are to be used in the temple, and now he strips the temple and all the treasuries and all the things that are precious all the way back to Jehoshaphat and gives it to Hazael to leave us alone. So what does Hazael do? He leaves him alone. He took his loot. Went home. Now, what'd that do with Joash as far as the people were concerned? The account of the Chronicles and the Kings discuss this for us.
Servants arose and made a conspiracy, it says.
They did. They arose and made a conspiracy. In other words, they killed Joash. And I find it interesting in chapter 24 of the account of the Chronicles, in verse 25 beginning, it says, and they, when they were departed from him, for they left him very sick, his own servants conspired against him for the blood of the sons of Jehoiada the priest, and slew him on his bed, and he died. And they buried him in the city of David, but they buried him not in the sepulchers of the kings. 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 25. The point being, he's murdered by his own people, it tells us, for the blood of the sons of Jehoiada the priest. Evidently, Jehoiada the priest was well thought of by the people. And what Joash has done, the people don't really approve of that, and so they kill him. They bury him, but not in the sepulcher of the kings. Wonder why?
Today we would say his popularity index went way down.
Yes, that's probably how you would express that. Yes. And those who conspired are identified in verse 26, and then in verse 27, now concerning his sons and the greatness of the burdens laid upon them and the rebuilding of the house of God, behold, they are written in the commentary of the book of the Kings, and Amaziah, his son, reigned in his stead. So that brings us to the conclusion of young Joash. Yes.
I had a couple of points that I wanted to, just some big.
Right.
And I thought that it was interesting that it's one of those, the side the Lord is on is the one that's going to win regardless of the numbers. And it's the first time that they pointed out that it's worked in reverse against the people of God this time.
Isn't that interesting?
It's usually the people of God coming with the tiny numbers up against this giant horde, and they win because God's on their side. But now the people of Judah have a bigger army than what the Syrians came with, and they're still losing because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Interesting observation. Very good.
So that was point number one. The other one is that in 2 Chronicles, again, when they're talking about Jehoiada and when he dies, I thought it was interesting that Jehoiada is buried in the sepulchers of the king.
Yes.
And Joash is not.
Yes. Excellent. Yes.
So they have what they have done by not burying him in the sepulchers of the kings, is to insult him and his family.
That's right. He is not honored. Now, and someone was talking with them today, in fact, about that point, being buried in the sepulcher of the fathers. We were discussing Jacob, Leah, and Rachel. How that Rachel was so adored by Jacob, but he got Leah, and he didn't really love Leah, but he was stuck with her. That's Mick's paraphrase. He was stuck with her. And when Leah began to name her children, she thought that she would obtain the love of Jacob because she had borne a son. And finally, she named a son a word that means peace. She made peace with it. And one of the sons was, I forget which one, was named a name that meant honor. And so her desire was to be honored by Jacob, even though he didn't love her. She wanted to be honored. And the irony of that is, when Rachel died, anyone remember where she was?
They were on a journey beside the road.
All right. Buried her beside the road, I believe, on a journey to Bethlehem, if I recall correctly. Yeah. Yes. And when Leah died, where were they?
They buried her
in the tomb of Machpelah. They did. So her desire to be honored was fulfilled. She was buried with the fathers in the cave of Machpelah. Yes. Excellent. Very good observations. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Just a simple question. The tombs of the kings, is that where David's buried? Does that identify where David's tomb was? was a place that Nehemiah mentions that.
I would think so. One of the things that's interesting to me is you see a similar statement made by Peter in Acts chapter 2. Is that what you were thinking?
I was going to say that the tomb of David is with us this day. And right now, in the valley of the Kidron, on the east side of Jerusalem, there is a tomb there that looks quite old that they say is the tomb of David.
Yeah.
And so it appears that the kings were all buried in a particular area on the hill that leads up that we call the Mount of Olives,
yeah.
That they were buried up there
yeah.
in that area. So it's a lot of tombs up there.
Yeah. That's an interesting observation. I think it's very interesting when you look at the text of Acts 2. It's almost as if Peter's pointing. David's sepulcher is with us unto this day. In other words, what David had prophesied about his body would not see corruption. If you go into that sepulcher, you'll find a body decayed. David's body is with us.
Well, I think they were speaking while they were in the temple area.
Yes.
And from the current temple area, you can see the tomb of the king of David, assuming it's the same one.
Okay.
They say that's it there.
Yeah. Well, it would make sense. It would seem reasonable that as prominent as David was, not only in biblical history, but secular history as well, that it would be likely to have an idea at least where the kings are buried. Yeah. As to which tomb, that might be questionable, but I think you've got an interesting point.
There's not much question in Egypt.
Pardon me?
Where the kings are buried.
Well, this particular map illustrates how that the Syrians came upon Judah and how that Joash took the treasures of the people, the treasures from the temple, and paid off Hazael to go away. Okay? All right? Now, when you see this screen, that means we're changing kings. All right? When you see this screen, it means we're going to show you the next king that we're going to talk about. And this time, we're going to switch sides and talk about Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu. Now, how long did the sons of Jehu continue to reign before we have a change in the dynasty?
Four generations.
Four generations, yes. That's what God promised unto Jehu. Because of the things that he did, there would be four generations, at least, that would sit upon the throne. Now, if you look at your chart, you drop down from... Turn too many pages. Okay. Yeah. Right after Zechariah, there was a dynasty change. And then Shalom, who was king for a month, and then a dynasty change. So I want you to make note of those things, and that's consistent with what God had said to him. Now let's go back and talk about Jehoahaz. Jehoahaz, we want to go to the account of the kings in 2 Kings chapter 13. 2 Kings chapter 13. So let's back over to that text and pick up the reading beginning at verse 1. Randy, would you mind to do some reading for me beginning in verse 1? Just go ahead and read through verse 9, if you would, please.
Okay, 2 Kings 13, 1 through 9. Mm-hmm. In the 23rd year of Joash, the son of Ahaziah, king of Judah, Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, became king over Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 17 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, and followed the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, with which he made Israel sin. He did not turn from them. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them continually into the hand of Hazael, the king of Aram, and into the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael. Then Jehoahaz entreated the favor of the Lord, and the Lord listened to him, for he saw the oppression of Israel, how the king of Aram oppressed them. The Lord gave Israel a deliverer, so that they escaped from under the hand of the Arameans, and the sons of Israel lived in their tents as formerly. Nevertheless, they did not turn away from the sins of the house of Jeroboam, with which he made Israel sin, and walked in them. And the Asherah also remained standing in Samaria. For he left to Jehoahaz and the army not more than 50 horsemen and 10 chariots and 10,000 footmen. The king of Aram had destroyed them and made them like the dust of threshing. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoahaz and all that he did and his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Jehoahaz slept with his fathers, and they buried him in Samaria. And Joash his son became king in his place.
All right, several things we want to note about this king. Jehoahaz, son of Jehu, as you recall, was God's henchman to get rid of Jezebel and Ahaziah and Jehoram. So we see God using Jehu. Here's his son. Now, in spite of, Randy, I believe it was you that made the observation, or perhaps it was Richard, made the observation that here is a man that God has spoken to. And yet Jehu turned away from God and ended up worshiping the golden calves. Got rid of Baal worship, but continued the sins of Jeroboam in the worship of the golden calves. Well, Jehoahaz, we ought not be surprised, he pursues that same course in the worship of Jeroboam's golden calves. Now, what was the rule again?
Baby.
Isn't that simple? But look at what Jehoahaz is doing. He's worshiping the idols, the golden calves. And in verse 3, it tells us that the anger of Jehovah was kindled against him. And so what did God do? He raised up Haziel, yes, and then his son Ben-Hadad, who is going to oppress them because of their idolatry. Now, what does Jehoahaz do? I find this just absolutely ironic. What does he do?
Turn to God.
He turned to God. Now, it's real easy, isn't it, when you're not serving the Lord and then you get in trouble.
Spare a tire.
Spare a tire. Yeah. God's always there. I don't have to serve Him, though I have to be faithful to Him. But when I get in trouble, I'm going to call on God. That's not uncommon. And it certainly was not uncommon here with Jehoahaz. He's in trouble. The Syrians are coming upon him. And the text tells us that he besought the Lord. That word, beseech, what's that mean to us? He begged the Lord. Well, why did the Lord listen to him? Why didn't he just turn a deaf ear? This is Israel, I mean. None of the kings were good. Why listen to this one?
It is one of the sons of Jehu,
that's right. And God had made a promise that would continue through the fourth generation of the sons of Jehu. But you'll notice in this text that God gave Israel a Savior. Verse 4, it tells us that God hearkened unto him, for he saw the oppression of Israel, how that the king of Syria oppressed them. So he provides for them a Savior to deliver them from the hand of the Syrians. And it tells us that the children of Israel dwelt in their tents as before time. In verse 6, it says, nevertheless, they departed not from the sins of the house of Jeroboam. What do they continue to do? Here's King Jehoahaz begging the Lord to deliver them from the Syrians. And all the while, what are the people continuing to do?
Calf worship.
It just makes you wonder, why in the world didn't God just blow them off the map? You see, but he didn't, because he'd made a promise. It wasn't time yet, which you read at verse 23. It wasn't time yet for him to do that. You'll note in the text, as we have labeled on the chart, in verses 22 through 25. Randy, while you're reading, would you read those verses for me, please?
Chapter 13, 22 through 25.
Mm-hmm.
Haziel, king of Aram, had oppressed Israel all the days of Jehoahaz. But the Lord was gracious to them and had compassion on them, and turned to them because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and would not destroy them nor cast them from his presence until now. When Haziel, king of Aram, died, Ben-Hadad, his son, became king in his place. And then Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, took again from the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Haziel, the cities which he had taken in war from the hand of Jehoahaz, his father. Three times Joash defeated him and recovered the cities of Israel.
All right, we're going to have to talk about that next time, but you see a lot of goodies in there. Point being, God delivered Israel because it was not yet time for them to be destroyed. All right, we'll talk more about that next time. Thank you for your comments, your input, your attention, your obvious preparation for this study. Thank you.